Tonight, KJZZ journalists Steve Goldstein and Mark Brody will be asking questions to our candidates. I will be moderating the event as well as keeping time. As I introduce tonight's candidates and throughout our event tonight, I ask that you please hold your applause. Joining us tonight are five of the Republican candidates for Arizona's gubernatorial primary. We have with us Secretary of State Ken Bennett, State Treasurer Doug Ducey, former business executive Christine Jones, former California Congressman Frank Riggs, and former Mesa Mayor Scott Smith. And the other Republican candidate who was invited to this event tonight is former Maricopa County Attorney Andrew Thomas. In this first portion of tonight's event, each candidate will answer the same question in four different topic areas. Candidates will have 2 minutes to respond, and if a follow-up question is asked, there will be a 90-second period to respond back. I will hold up a red card when the candidate has 30 seconds left in his or her response time, and there will be a tone when the time is up. The tone sounds like this. Okay, tonight, the first question, Steve, will go to Frank Riggs.
Mr. Riggs, Arizona was one of the states hardest hit during the Great Recession. What, in your experience, qualifies you to work to insulate the state at least somewhat from inevitable future recessions?
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate that question, Steve and panel. I'd like you to know that I've actually signed both sides of a paycheck. I consider myself an entrepreneur at heart. But before I went into the private sector, I voluntarily served in the United States Army. I'm the only military veteran running for governor. Out of the Army, I became a police officer and actually married my wife to be, Kathy, a native daughter of Tucson, my wife of 34 years, who, since we met as police officers, has always outranked me and been the boss in the Riggs household. And I got actively involved in the community as a direct result of being a small businessman. I got actively involved in Republican Party politics in Northern California, where I lived at the time, after building two successful real estate and outdoor advertising businesses from the ground up, and in 1990 ran for and was elected to the United States Congress by defeating a four-term Democrat incumbent who'd been tainted by the savings and loan scandal. In my first term in Congress, organized the Gang of Seven to expose the House bank and post office scandals, and later in my next two terms, joined with the Republican majority in the House to balance the federal budget. When I left Congress in 1998 to keep my term limits commitment, the federal budget was balanced and generated surpluses for four consecutive years thereafter, and we had fundamentally reformed welfare by imposing time limits and work requirements on welfare recipients. Then I went back to the private sector and resumed my life as a citizen. I had the honor of chairing the House Education Subcommittee in my last term in Congress, and authored the federal law on charter schools. So I then spent 16 years building the largest nonprofit corporation and community development financial institution in the country from here in Arizona, dedicated to helping charter schools with their facility financing and development needs. So I have very, very deep experience in both the private and public sectors, and I'll bring that lifetime of leadership service and experience to the governor's office, and I'll make reviving our economy, fixing our state budget, getting our state moving again to create good-paying, living-wage jobs the first priority.
Mr. Riggs, as a follow-up question to that,
okay.
Has Arizona relied too much on construction and real estate? Would you change that if you were governor?
Well, construction and real estate are important. What we obviously want is a diversified economy, and our recovery as a state has recovery from the recession has been very tepid. It hasn't been what it should be, and it hasn't, in terms of the jobs that we've added back, they haven't been the kind of good-paying, career-related jobs that we'd like to see. The fundamental responsibility of state government is to make sure that every Arizona child has access to a high-quality education. And I personally believe we have to focus a lot more on the 13th and 14th years of education, because the majority of our kids aren't college bound or won't complete college, but they need the assistance with career related training. How long do I get in the follow-up, by the way?
90 seconds.
90 seconds, I've got a little time. I also want to say this, 95% of Arizona businesses are small or very small businesses. I can relate to that because my businesses have been small, and I understand, again, what it takes to meet a payroll with your heart in your throat. I want to offer an incentive, though, for all Arizona businesses to take risk and create jobs. What has really lagged in this economic recovery has been business investment, and I want to create a new incentive for every Arizona business, regardless of size, to be able to fully and immediately expense investment expenses in the same year that those investment expenses are made.
The next question will be for Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith, the same question for you. What in your experience qualifies you to help try to insulate the state, at least to the extent possible, from future recessions?
Thank you. And you know, the reality is that the governor of Arizona and the state of Arizona, we're really at the mercies of the macroeconomy, the economy of the United States. But what we can do is we can carve out our niche. We can make a difference in our own world. There's no doubt that we rose an increasing economy, a boom, so to speak, to the highest levels because primarily of growth, which meant that when the economy sputtered, we were in a free fall more than anyone else. You know, my background is 30 years of business experience, CPA for 25 of those, an MBA, law degree from ASU here in Tempe, and both being a business advisor, a consultant, and also running a business and building it from a very small business into a very large business that did over nearly $200 million a year in revenue and had over 300 employees. I know how to adapt. I know how to take advantage of opportunities. I know how to find our niche. And when I became mayor of Mesa, I took that same approach. I looked at our city and said, listen, we just simply can't be a boat out here in a stream that goes whichever way the current takes us. We have got to take advantage of our opportunities. And we came up with a focus of what we are good at. We call it HEAT: healthcare, education, aerospace, tourism, technology. And that led us to not only focus our vision, but also focus our efforts. We built a plan based upon that. We took advantage of that plan, and because of that, we brought in opportunities to Mesa that we otherwise would not have had. We can do the same thing in Arizona. We have our own HEAT: healthcare, education, energy, extraction, aerospace, agriculture, tourism, technology, which really is our new five C's. It defines much of what Arizona's economy is. If we'll create the vision of how we are going to create high-skilled jobs, if we will build a plan based upon that, we may not be able to define what the economy gives us, but what we can do is we can adapt and we can adjust, so therefore we can smooth out the peaks and smooth out the depths.
Mr. Smith, as a follow-up, what kind of resources from the government would it take to try to do that?
Well, the first resource is leadership. We found that these things don't just happen by accident. Apple came to Mesa and invested $2 billion. So it was a five-year overnight success story. The seeds were sowed really in 2009 when we created this vision, when we created a plan and then started to work the plan. The idea is that what a governor can do is the governor can change the conversation. The governor can be out there as not only the spokesperson and the main cheerleader for the state, but also the one that leads the vision and brings people together. This is a group activity. This is all about leadership. This is about setting that vision, bringing the legislature as partners, bringing the business community as partners, the educational community as partners. Once you have that group together, and the governor is the one office in the state that is the great convener, that can bring parties together, great things can happen, opportunities can happen, and economies can grow.
The next question will be for Mr. Bennett, Steve.
Mr. Bennett, same question for you. What can Arizona do to insulate from the next big recession?
Well, I think you were focusing on our experience and how that would, you know, connect
right
to that. I guess I would point to three primary things. One is 30 years in the private sector. I'm a native Arizonan, fifth generation, but it really doesn't matter whether you've been here five generations or 5 weeks. If you love Arizona as I do and want to make it successful going forward, one of the things I think you have to understand as far as a role in government in helping to insulate our economy is to understand how the private sector works. For 23 years, I ran a family business that my grandparents had started up in the Prescott area. And I think it's important for a governor to understand how business works, to have signed the fronts of checks and not just the backs. I think a second aspect to experience, at least for me and a couple of us, is that local government experience. I remember as a new city councilman in Prescott, and the director of the Arizona League of Cities and Towns came up and gave us a training, and he kind of shared his philosophy about how every level of government always seems to complain about how the ones above them are giving them unfunded mandates and telling them what to do, and then for some reason some of those same people turn right around and do the same things to the governments below them. And so that was a good foundation for me, because years later I would find myself involved in the third aspect of experience, and that is serving at the legislature. And of all the good candidates in the race, I'm the one that has that experience, 8 years in the state Senate, and 4 years as the CEO, if you want to think of it, of the Senate, as Senate President. And one of the most important things that a governor, I believe, needs to do is know how to get things done in the legislative process. Even when you have good ideas and you want to do ABC, it seems like there's 90 other people that want to do DEF or XYZ, or a lot of them want to just do NOPE. And so getting things done and bringing people together and getting things done for the state of Arizona, I think, is an important part of the experience that a governor needs.
As a follow-up question then, if you talk about your public and private experience, the term public-private partnership comes up quite often. Mm-hmm. How would you make that work as governor?
Well, both at the city council level and at the state level, where I've had the opportunity to serve, you always look for opportunities to create public-private partnerships. I think one of the most important things that the public sector needs to do is get out of the way of the private sector and let them be successful and thrive. Most entrepreneurs, especially in the private sector, are not looking for a handout from government. They're looking for an environment to be created where they can operate their companies and be successful. And so creating a low level of bureaucracy and all of the red tape that sometimes accompanies government regulations, I think, is important. Creating a tax system that creates an environment where companies want to move here or they want to stay here and grow here. Our education system. I actually believe that our economy and growing our economy comes down to four main aspects. I've talked about two. One is the cost of doing business, our tax policies and that. One is the regulatory environment. A very important one is our education system. Do we have a system where our students are coming out of high school or our universities in a way that they can help make companies successful, whether those are companies looking to come to Arizona or stay here and be successful? And then the fourth is the image that we create about our state.
Mark, the next question goes to Mr. Ducey.
Mr. Ducey, it'll be the same question. What in your experience qualifies you to work to insulate the state to the extent possible from the next recession?
Thanks, Mark. My name is Doug Ducey, and I do want to be your next governor. I do think it's time to kickstart our economy, and I think doing that is the best way to protect our economy is to grow it and to have more resources and to be more a state of plenty. I think my background equips me to do that. I think that's why we're off to a fast start in this race. You're known by the company you keep. We're proud to be endorsed by Arizona Right to Life, former Senator John Kyle, current governor Scott Walker of Wisconsin, and the one gentleman that was in this race several weeks ago, Al Melvin, who said that he was going to step out and endorse me and called me the most conservative, electable Republican in the race. And I said, we'll take that, Al. I came to Arizona in 1982. I didn't know one person, and I had never been here. It's been quite an adventure. In many of the rooms I'm in, I'm able to ask who was born somewhere other than the state of Arizona. It seems like 80% of the hands go up. So people come here because we enjoy a better quality of life. This is a great place to live, work, play, recreate, retire, visit, and get an education. We need to improve some things, but we need to better amplify that out to the other 49 states. I studied finance at Arizona State University, worked my way through college at the local Anheuser-Busch distributorship, and started my career at Procter & Gamble. After that, along with a few others, we built an ice cream company called Cold Stone Creamery. We built Cold Stone to 1,440 stores, operating in all 50 states. We sold Cold Stone in 2007. Today, it operates in 25 countries around the world. So I've built a business. Now I want to shrink a government and grow an economy. I think that experience as an entrepreneur doing business in every state and building a brand that is known and loved not only around the country but now the world puts me in a position to not only understand what makes small business grow here but how to present Arizona out to other 49 states to grow our economy.
And Mr. Ducey, as a follow-up, you mentioned a lot of people coming here from somewhere else, and for a long time the state has relied on population growth as a way to sort of grow the economy. Given the recession and the number of people who left here for elsewhere, is it time to move on to something else as a way to kickstart the economy?
Well, Mark, as a small businessman, I embrace growth. Growth is a gift. Everyone knows when their business is growing, you get to make good options. When I go back to see my dad every year around Father's Day in Toledo, when you fly back to Northwest Ohio, you land in Detroit, Michigan. In 1960, Detroit was the richest city in the country, and they thought that the big three could never be stopped. We have people naturally coming here, people that are voting with their feet, with their Ryder trucks and their U-Hauls. So this growth is a gift, and it's something we should use to leverage and maximize our economy and truly diversify it. So I think the growth is something that the governor can use to help bring our economy to life and to bring others here. But the fact that we've got a superior place to live and people want to come here, this is something that doesn't last forever. We want to make sure in this next growing economy that we truly do the right thing so that we don't face the downturn we did in 2009.
Next question is for Ms. Jones.
And Ms. Jones, we'll come back to you for the original question. Please tell us about how your experience would help cushion Arizona from the next recession.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. And thanks to KJZZ, if we haven't said that yet, for hosting this. I am Christine Jones. I'm a Republican candidate for governor, but I wasn't always a candidate for governor. Once upon a time, not so long ago, I was just a regular, ordinary, average, everyday citizen sitting in seats like most of you listening to other people running for office. I spent about 25 years in the private sector, I suppose, developing the skills that you talk about in terms of how to insulate the economy. I had the great good fortune to join a tiny little startup company in North Scottsdale with the crazy name GoDaddy, when it were just a few dozen employees. And over about a decade, we grew that company to around 4,000 people. Most of those jobs we created right here in Arizona. And it was an incredible journey, and I count it a great privilege to have been a part of it. We are immensely proud of what we created there. But not just because of the 4,000 jobs and the hundreds of millions of dollars we poured into the Arizona economy, but because we survived and grew and thrived in an environment where it felt like the government was trying to make us fail. So what are the things that the government should do to enable the private sector? It is the following. Get out of the way of the small businesses so that more of those GoDaddy stories can go from small businesses to big businesses. If you had asked me when GoDaddy was small, what is the single thing the government can do to make your life better, I would have said, just leave us alone. Stop making me file $0 tax returns in cities where I don't do business. Stop making me file the same permit for my business when nothing in my business has changed. Stop making me wait for months on end to do a project. You're stopping job growth. You're stopping our growth. Help us help you. That's the first thing. The second thing then is you got to go outside of the state. To those companies that would relocate anyway, say to the CEOs, let me tell you why Arizona is your wisest choice. This is about setting the playing field for the private sector to create jobs, because more jobs lead to more taxpayers, which leads to lower taxes for everyone.
Ms. Jones, as a follow-up then, what do you think the role of agencies or outfits like the Greater Phoenix Economic Council and Arizona Commerce Authority should be going forward?
GPEC and the ACA, and in fact, there are many of these organizations around the state that we've talked to, play a critical role, but I think it is specifically the governor's job to lead this effort. And one of the reasons why the state of Texas, for example, has been so successful at this, and they have been, is because the governor of Texas actually gets on a plane and flies to Silicon Valley and sits down with companies and has this conversation. It is specifically about leading the state in that context. Now, we haven't had a governor that focused on this for a long time for a number of reasons. Governor Brewer took over when the state's economy was really struggling, so she and the legislature have really had to focus on the budget. But it's time for us to build on that good work and go out now to say, we're going to focus on building industry-specific concentrations in geographic areas. And it makes a whole lot of sense if you start to break down the state. What makes sense in Flagstaff, where incredible development is being done in energy and power distribution, is not the same as what makes sense in, say, for example, Lake Havasu or Bullhead City, where it's more tourism focused. It's not the same as what exists in Nogales or Yuma, where the advancement in agriculture would blow you away. Not the same as Pinal County, where it makes a whole lot of sense to focus on manufacturing jobs. So actually to go out affirmatively and build those industry concentrations, kind of like what Governor Fannin did back in the 50s, this is a critical next step and vision casting and generational vision casting for the state that the governor can and should do.
Prior to the start of the event backstage, we drew drew straws to determine which candidates would answer, be the first to answer each question. Based on that, Mark, Mr. Bennett will be answering the next question first.
All right, Mr. Bennett, Governor Brewer is appealing the recent court ruling that says the state has to pay about $317 million to schools, with the possibility of around $3 billion more in coming years. Assuming that ruling is upheld, the next governor is going to have to figure out where that money is going to come from. So where would you find it?
Well, I think it's very important that we restructure our tax system in Arizona so that the revenue coming into the general fund flows with the economy instead of spiking high in the good times and dropping way down in the bad times. When I left the state Senate in 2007, the state budget was balanced with about $9.5 billion coming in and $9.5 billion going out. And we had about $1.1 billion in the state's rainy day fund and other reserve accounts. When the economy dipped by about 10%, in 08, 09, and 10, the revenue coming to the state's general fund dropped from $9.5 billion to $6.5 billion, almost a one-third drop. And I don't think anyone would structure a business model or even a government model where when 10% of your activity goes away, one-third of your revenue disappears. And so I have suggested that I believe that the fairest way to tax and the way that you could connect the revenue stream with the economy so that it flowed with the economy instead of spiking perhaps even too high in the good years and people get used to having lots of money and then dropping off a cliff in the bad years, would be to move from an income tax and our sales tax system to a tax system based on consumption so that you have a low rate, broad-based consumption tax tied to as many transactions as possible in the economy. Now the Arizona, now some would say, well, you're going to have to substantially increase the sales tax in order to do that. That's not necessarily true. The Arizona economy is about $280 billion a year. If you had, and I'm not suggesting this as a specific plan, but just an illustration of the possibility, if you had a low tax rate on almost all transactions in the economy, that rate would only need to be 3.5% on $280 billion of transactions to generate the same $9 billion that our income and sales tax currently produce. If you wanted to exclude other transactions, you could lower, the rate would have to go up a little bit, but you would just have a less broad base.
So as a follow-up then, given where the economy is right now, not real high, not real low, come January when you or one of your colleagues here could be taking office, would you look to the rainy day fund to cover that $317 million? Would you have to make spending cuts? Would you look for money somewhere else?
Well, I think you'd have to look everywhere in about $9.25 billion budget to reprioritize things if necessary. The appeal has been filed. Whether or not the next level of the courts will agree with the lower court or whether they will overturn that, we don't know yet. But of all the candidates in the race, the only one that has balanced the state budget is myself, and we did so by always looking at the priorities that were needed. Now, some will say, well, Bennett, you were there during the good times, but during my 4 years as Senate President, we had some tough economic years. 03 and 04 were, you know, kind of down times, flat revenues coming in, and we had to make tough decisions to prioritize our money. In 05 and 06, the economy got healthy, and we were able to do some things. We cut taxes, but we also put the largest amount of new spending into K-12 education and into our universities in the history of the state. So it's always a matter of prioritizing, and $300 million is a large sum of money, but it's about 3% of a $9 billion budget. So you look at ways like you would have to do in a business or in a family, and you prioritize all of your revenue, look at all of your expenses, put your first dollars in your first priority, and go on to the second, third, and fourth, and you end up with a balanced budget going forward. Using the rainy day fund to pay for ongoing expenses is not something that I would recommend.
The next question is for Mr. Ducey.
Mr. Ducey, same question. Assuming the ruling on K-12 education funding holds up, where would you find $317 million from the state budget?
Well, we have options, and the state should explore those options. If anyone asks you what Doug Ducey's campaign is about, tell them it's about growth and job creation. I think if Arizona stands for any one single idea, it's opportunity for all, good jobs, and a chance to get ahead. The options that are in front of the governor in this next session are to either comply with the ruling, to appeal the ruling, to restructure the ruling, or to ignore the ruling. I think Governor Brewer made the right decision in appealing the ruling, and I applaud her for doing that. So we will have some time to decide here. I think in the interim, we need to look at the $9 billion that is flowing through our state, federal, and local budgets to fund K-12 education. The real opportunity here is, much like we talk about where the state was in 2009, and I think it's important to remember that not that long ago, our state was bankrupt, insolvent, structurally broken. We were negative $730 million in the state's checking account. Today, we have $2.3 billion cash in that same account, $454 million in a reserve account earning interest. So I don't want to paint the picture that we've turned the economy around, because we haven't, but we're on much firmer financial footing. If we're going to head into a downturn or we're going to have these budget issues, the opportunity is to look at the 80 separate state agencies and budgets that report directly to the governor, and say, how do we reorganize? How do we restructure? How do we do things better so that we measure for real outcomes and real results in K-12 education? Our current governor came into office at a time of real financial crisis. The next governor comes in at a time of opportunity, and I intend to maximize that.
As a follow-up, how clear would you be to the legislature, if you were to become governor, that K-12 funding is a priority for you, so even if another recession happens, it's clear that you don't want those kind of cuts?
I would be very clear to the legislature about what's important to me with K-12 funding, and I think it's important to realize that not only do I have three small children, but I also am a former member of the State Charter School Board, a former regional member of Teach for America's board, and I sat as a trustee at Arizona State University. I can talk a lot about the economy and how to grow it, simplifying taxes, reducing regulations, and lightening liability, but the best way to grow our economy long term is to have a world-class education system, to have our kids who spend kindergarten plus 12 years come out of school and be ready to do something in the real world or go on for further study. This is something, you know, a lot of people think this is an Arizona-only issue. This is an issue facing all 50 states. We have people that are getting a piece of paper when they leave high school and they're not equipped to count change in an ice cream store. Now, we have three of the top 10 high schools in the nation right here in Arizona. We know how to educate a child. Let's take the best practices that are working at these schools and embrace the teachers that are really performing. And instead of talking like some elected people do, as if it's the teacher's fault, let's look to the teachers for the solutions. Let's get the dollars to the classrooms. Let's get the K-12 principals like Dr. Chad Gaston at Camelback High School, who has turned that Phoenix Union School around, and let's have them spreading best practices across the state. And improvement and real results in K-12 education will be a driving force of a Ducey administration.
Mark, the next question is for Ms. Jones.
Ms. Jones, same question. Assuming that the court ruling is upheld, where do you find $317 million?
Well, you may have noticed that there's not $317 million just laying around waiting to be spent. And this is a critical, maybe even rising to the level of a potential crisis situation if you take all of the back spending into consideration that we're facing at this point. $317 million barely scratches the surface. So what do you do? Now, I'm a CPA, so I have a tendency to overanalyze numbers, but I think we have to be honest in looking at this to say that there are two sides to the income statement, and one of the weaknesses of the budgeting formula is that we have a tendency to focus singularly on the expense side. We're barely meeting our obligations as it is, okay? So wouldn't it be interesting to take a look at the revenue side, like what you would do in a business, to say, I need to spend more money, so I got to make more money? That is the first thing we have to do. Part of that is creating the environment for people or for businesses to create jobs. The second piece then is to say, in Arizona, we get on average about 54 cents on the dollar into the classroom. The national average is about 62 cents per dollar. The public school systems in Arizona that are doing a really good job, and there are some, believe me, Chandler and Vail and Glendale, they're at about 61.5 cents per dollar that get to the classroom. So what we should do is to say, among the 227 school districts in Arizona, let's find some economies of scale so that we can get that number up and close that gap. Because on $9 billion, which is what we spend on education in Arizona every year, 8% is a big number. It's between $700 and $800 million. That's the second piece. That's a huge savings. That could be a place for us to get a pickup. And then the third piece is, I've never crunched these numbers in full disclosure, but I've read that the funding for Common Core is going to cost us somewhere between $300 and $350 million. That would be a place that we could pick up a big savings as well. But necessarily, you have to focus on the things that are the most critical and the most important to you, and K-12 spending certainly ought to be among those things.
And as a quick follow-up, you mentioned some of the ways that you might try to find some of the money. Those sound more kind of like maybe long-term kind of plans, not something you come in and the first week of your administration would be able to do. So assuming, again, that the ruling is upheld, is there a place that if you had to meet that obligation right away, first, you know, couple weeks of your governorship, do you have a sense of where you might look to do that?
Well, again, you have to say to your legislature, we're going to go take this budget challenge, I guess I'll call it. We're going to take this budget challenge on together, and we're going to go allocate this money. If you're ordered by a court, and I'm an attorney, so I'm an officer of the court, I'm very much going to respect that ruling. We're either going to appeal it or we're going to implement it. Here's what we're going to do. It's $300 and something million. That's what we got to do. We got to come up with that money. Clearly, we've gotten into this situation over a period of time by deferring costs that we should have been paying if the court rules that way today, you know, saving them for tomorrow. So you have to say, are we going to pay that out of the rainy day fund, for example, you mentioned earlier? I'm not sure that that's the right thing to do, because we're already withholding somewhere on the order of $800 or $900 million from the local state or the local and county governments in specific funding like HERF. We're already way behind in the allocation of resources in some other areas like SLIF funds and that sort of thing. So the rainy day fund, if we would back pay all of the things that we owe, is probably zero or less than zero already. So I'm not sure that's where we get that money. But I do think you have to say, I've already said I want to spend $270 million on border security. We got $370 million for education. You got to make tough choices, but you have to do it together and build a community effort and acknowledge these issues for what they are. They're statewide challenges that require cooperation and leadership to solve.
The next question will be for Mr. Riggs.
Mr. Riggs, coming back to the original question, based on the K-12 education ruling, where would you find $317 million to comply?
Let's do get back to the original question. I appreciate that, Steve. I absolutely support Governor Brewer's decision to challenge the Maricopa County Superior Court decision. I also, by the way, support her challenge of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision overturning her longstanding ban on driver's licenses for illegal immigrants in our state. I'm a former school board president, as I mentioned at the outset. I am the former chairman of the House of Representatives Education Subcommittee. After leaving Congress, I started and built from the ground up a community development financial institution that provides expanded educational opportunity and more parental school choice through bricks and mortar, including Arizona charter schools that today educate over 5,000 students. And I started and served as the volunteer board president of a statewide online charter school that provides virtual educational services and an accredited curriculum to families that want to homeschool their children. So my highest priority after public safety is K-12 education. Access to a high quality education is the fundamental foundation of equal opportunity in our society. But that said, we have very real fiscal challenges as a state. We face really our own fiscal cliff looming dead ahead. So what I would like to do, I'm the only candidate that said, I will use the executive authority of the governor's office and I will repeal Arizona's participation in Common Core on day one. And I say that because I'm confident that Arizonans can design the standards and tests that we should use to educate our kids, and that is a fundamental responsibility of Arizonans and state government, because K-12 education accounts for 40% of the state budget. In terms of generating more funding, the Arizona Association of School Business Officials says it'll cost over $350 million to fully implement Common Core, and frankly, that's money that we now know we need to spend to raise the base level of K-12 education funding if the Superior Court judge's decision stands.